Welcome to the Exec MBA Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Emily McMahon. Emily is a graduate from our Executive MBA class of 2010, and she and I recently connected via Zoom to talk about her decision to pursue an MBA, what led her to Darden, what she's been up to since graduation, and so much more. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here's my interview with Emily McMahon. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. Thank you so much for taking some time. We're connected on LinkedIn. I see you've been on many podcasts. You haven't been on this podcast. We're excited to have you on this podcast. Thank you for doing this.
Well, thank you so much for having me. As I was just joking with you, I'm so humbled to be on this podcast, and I have so many amazing classmates that I feel like will hopefully be following me. So.
Well, I'm curious, how are you doing during this time? It's been an unusual year, so yeah. Are you hanging in there?
I am hanging in there, and I have to give a warning. I have three small children, school-age children, so if anybody comes busting in here, we'll just sort of roll with the punches, which is kind of what we've been doing all year. So yes, it's been a very interesting year, so to speak, across all, all areas of my life, but I think there's some hope in the future this spring with some activities, and just my kids going back to school will be exciting, hopefully. So, yeah.
Any new pandemic hobbies, pastimes, anything you've picked up in this,
yeah.
in this time?
I feel like I'm supposed to say I got a dog, but that's one area I'm definitely going to put my foot down. I am not getting a pandemic dog anytime soon, much to my kids' chagrin. No, I can't say I have anything that's particularly fascinating. My one thing for this year, though, is I'm only reading books that are funny. So I'm definitely trying to have some moments of levity when I read, and just trying to, 2021 is going to be the book of, or the year of humor. So if you have any good books for me, please recommend them.
Oh man. Well, I spent my 2020 essentially reading. That's what I did. So my goal was to get to 100 books. I got to 89.
Wow.
So for 2021, trying to get to 100 books. We'll see if we can do it.
I know. So, that's amazing. I'm a little slower than that's a little aggressive for me, but
it might tell you a little bit about it. A little bit about my year, if I was able to read that many books.
But. Yeah, I know. I get it.
Well, thank you for doing this, and thanks for coming on. Glad to hear you're doing well. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about your background. What did you do before Darden?
Sure. So, and I think it's also good to give some context. So it's, 2021 now, and I started Darden in 2008, which makes me feel very long in the tooth right now, just in terms of my journey. But I think it's kind of important to talk about. Prior to Darden, I was the CFO of a startup government contractor here in the Washington, D.C. area. And before that, I was an active duty Army military police officer. And I share that just because I think that that's really important to kind of how I ended up at Darden and my journey. And I also share that because at the time when I started Darden, I felt like I had been out of active duty for years and years, but it really had only been about 2 years. And so looking back, it was definitely much more in transition than I probably recognized at the time. But that was sort of my journey before I attended Darden, is kind of military and then kind of getting into business in a CFO capacity.
And for our executive MBA program historians out there, the program started in 06. So you were one of the first classes.
Yeah, we were definitely one of the first classes. So I know, I kind of chuckle thinking back. We were new. So yeah, very exciting.
So how did you decide an MBA was right for you?
Yeah, so I kind of in the back of my mind knew that I always wanted to get an MBA at some point in my career. That was always kind of a goal. I was always considering graduate school of some sorts, but thought an MBA would be really important. What kind of pushed me over the line, though, was I was in a CFO kind of operator role. And for my undergraduate, I went to the military academy, which was a fantastic education and experience, but really not a lot of business type courses, as you can imagine, given the mission of the school. And so something that was really important to me was to marry up the academic experience and confidence with my role, kind of with what I was doing. And at that time, I just didn't really have that at that kind of juncture. And so that's ultimately what made me go, I need to kind of feel like I've got the chops academically to support the role that I'm in and kind of touch the wall in that regard. And that's kind of what led me to my MBA.
What about Darden specifically resonated with you?
Yeah. So this is a little bit of a random story, but I think it's probably, I think it's relevant in that. So my husband was deployed the year, I guess it was 2007, and I had moved to Washington, D.C. to join this startup during his year. I just transitioned, and I thought, you know, I'm going to take this year to explore Washington, D.C., not knowing that I would still be here, you know, today. And as part of that year, you're allowed to go on 2 weeks of what they call R&R vacation. And we decided, we didn't have kids at the time, like, let's go to Jamaica for a week. It'll be super fun, you know, get away from Iraq. And it was hurricane season. And Hurricane Dean, and I remember this so vividly. Like, not only did it come through the time of our vacation, but it like sat on Jamaica. So there was just no hope of us going on this vacation at all. And so we decided to go kind of as like a, where are we going to go? We decided to go to Charlottesville. And once we got there, I'm kind of like, okay, we saw Monticello, we kind of did the basic stuff. And then I said, I'd love to just go explore UVA and Darden, if you don't mind. And so I kind of jumped in on a tour and did this almost like tourist, coming in and trying to just get some information. And I really fell in love with the school. And I thought, this is actually where I really want to go. And I confessed then that like, this is kind of what I want to do. And I want to make this happen. And I share it because a year later, I ended up going to Jamaica with my husband. And I was at Dulles at the baggage claim. And my first phone message when I opened up my phone was from Barbara Millar telling me that I was accepted into the program. And I feel like this is such a serendipitous, like, had I not gone to Charlottesville, you know, that weekend or that week, whatever it was, like, this would never have happened. So I do want to credit Barbara for that phone call. And I felt like, oh, you know, standing at baggage claim and saying, yes, I want to come and I have to get my bag. So, yeah.
Wow. That story is incredible. So it all starts with a trip to Jamaica.
Started with a failed trip to Jamaica. So we did end up going, but yeah. And I love Charlottesville. I love the area. I just really felt like the sense of history, not only at UVA, at Darden, and having gone to the military academy, I was just really sort of fascinated by the history and the experience and you know, just the people that I knew that have gone there. So, yeah.
So you come to Darden, imagine there's an adjustment to being back in school again. Yeah. What were some of the learning curves for you?
Oh my goodness. So, so one of the biggest learning curves for me was to remember that I wasn't an observer. So Darden is very adamant about participation, and there it's very much kind of part of the program. It's just like the duty almost to contribute and to observe or to, you know, be a participating member. It's really like the basis of the program. I am probably a little more introverted, and I just, in a classroom at the time, it was, I think, about 60 people. I just found myself feeling like I was observing and watching and just in awe of all of my classmates. And so I almost had to pinch myself and remind myself that like, I wasn't like listening to a podcast, for instance. I was actually like a contributing member of this group. And I had to almost like really force myself to remind myself to participate, because I was just, I loved listening to everybody. And so that was a big learning curve for me, just to kind of get back into the classroom setting and kind of force myself to be a little bit more vocal in class and not be so in awe of all of my classmates. But I think that was a huge learning curve. But I also think it was one of the best parts of the program for me. Having transitioned from active duty, I just was in awe of what people did for jobs and careers. And so I felt like I was just constantly listening and asking questions and just really curious. Having just transitioned from active duty myself, I was just really like, this is just so amazing to have doctors and professionals and CFOs. And I mean, it was exactly what I needed just to be sort of embedded into this audience. So that was a big learning curve for me. I think just going back to school as well was a big learning curve, and just adjusting that into sort of my daily life, and just for, you know, turning on that side of my brain again, frankly, is a little bit of adjustment. So, yeah.
Well, to a person, when people come on the podcast, current students and alumni invariably talk about their classmates.
Yes.
And yeah. I think that's, I mean, part of that is they're such interesting people, but part of that is how you learn at Darton, right? You're constantly hearing from other people in the room. Did you get comfortable with that class participation part? I mean, did you get to a place where you felt like you didn't have to pinch yourself anymore?
Yeah. And I think, so I definitely got used to the size of the group. And again, that was more just for, like, obviously we had a lot of smaller breakout sessions and a lot of like group discussions as well. I mean, the learning groups is a way, you know, you're in a very intimate group of, you know, 5-6 people as well. So that's important. But yeah, I definitely became comfortable. I think it was just kind of getting back into school shape was a little bit of an adjustment for me, and just, you know, just getting back into that. But I think the piece that I really loved too, and this is going to sound maybe a little nerdy, but it was such a great experience, or such a great realization that, like, I'm here for myself, not like, it's truly education in the best sense, because you're there because you want to be there. You know, it's like almost the best, it's the best place to be, where you're really in like a curious, excited, you know, I'm just so excited that I had that opportunity. Like, don't get me wrong, grades are important, everything's important, but it's really like, how are you applying this in your life? And I think that that's a huge benefit of the executive MBA program, is that you're working and doing all this stuff. And that's really, really key.
Appreciate that point. I mean, this is an intentional decision, right?
Yeah.
People think about this for a while, and I don't think people just stumble into an executive MBA program. You
right.
really do think about it, and it's an intentional decision for our
right.
students.
Yeah. I think if your arm is twisted to go, you won't last, just because it's too much work over, you know, it's not forever, but it's a sustained enough amount of effort at a pace and intensity that you just have to be in it for the right reasons, I believe, or it's just, you know, it's going to be not a good experience. Yeah.
So, of course, students explore while they're at Darton. You mentioned all of the conversations, your curiosity about your classmates.
Yeah.
Did your time at Darton shape what you wanted to do post-MBA?
It did. Well, it admittedly completely shaped my career post Darton, but not intentionally, I would say. So one of the biggest changes that happened to me after I graduated from Darton in 2010 is I ended up continuing in my CFO role, but then I transitioned from that in 2013 and connected with one of my Darton classmates, Stephanie Landrum, who is the president CEO of the Alexandria Economic Development Partnership, and just such a wonderful person. And she expressed an interest in a problem that the city of Alexandria was trying to solve, which is around veteran transition, veteran entrepreneurship. How can the city of Alexandria reap the benefits of you know, the veteran business community, so to speak? I also have to set the stage. This was 2013, 2014. Sequestration was really big with the drawdown. And so that relationship ultimately kind of catapulted me in a different direction in terms of starting a veteran incubator in Washington, D.C. And it's really as a direct result of Stephanie. I have to also say, while I'm on the topic, it's just so fascinating to be in school and then actually work with one of your classmates. And Stephanie is such a gem, because not only was so impressed and admired her so much in class, obviously, and we're great friends to this day, but to see her in action was just phenomenal every day. I mean, she really is just such an amazing, business person and leader. And so just to also have that opportunity to connect with a classmate in that level of friendship and business was amazing. So, yeah.
That's a great point, because I imagine when you're in class together, you're like seeing a piece of who they are, maybe socialize after class too, but
exactly.
You don't go to work with them every day.
Exactly. You know, it's almost like you don't go home with these people. Like I was, you know, connected with Stephanie. And so I think that trust and that foundation and shared experience really kind of gave us the foundation to explore this entity. I also feel like it's a testament to her, because, you know, sometimes you can go through those experiences and come out on the other side and the relationship gets tested in a way that's not, you know, it doesn't always end up great because of your friends. But I can say working with Stephanie, like, you know, just, I still have so much respect and watching her flourish and her time and her role there, you know, so I, a little plug to bring Stephanie on the podcast next.
We're always taking suggestions. Some of our best ideas have come from past guests. So I'm going to write that down.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about, so you're working on this incubator for, you know, startup incubator for veterans.
Yeah.
What's the name of it? You know, sort of how did it go in, as you're doing that work?
Yeah. So the name, everything sort of evolved in that experience, but I can say that I directly pulled from my Darden experience into that. A number of the speakers that I brought in, we initially started off, Greg Fairchild ran, he did some coursework for us. Paul Simcoe did as well, and came up from Charlottesville to support our entrepreneurs, sort of like the case studies and the method to kind of give them, again, that academic piece, you know, and some of these folks had MBAs as well. So it was great to be able to pull in the expertise of Darden. Tim Ogilvy, I don't know if that name sounds familiar, design thinking, I brought him in. Chick Thompson, over at the Batten Institute, we had him come in as a guest speaker. So I have to admit, I brought in a lot of my Darden resources and connections to build up the infrastructure of not only like the actual content we were teaching, but also just the guest speakers and the and just the whole infrastructure had a big Darden stamp on it. So thank you.
Yeah. What did you enjoy about that work? I mean, I've talked to a fair number of veterans here on the podcast and also in just the work that I do as a admissions officer. We have a fair number of veterans looking at the program, active duty service members as well.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of them have, at least on the side, maybe an entrepreneurial interest. And
yeah.
I've been curious about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been interesting. And it's also a little bit of like, you know, I'm obviously a veteran myself. So I felt like I'm also part of that population. I think with respect, you know, to the veteran entrepreneur piece, there's truly folks that are more oriented towards starting something and growing something. I don't think that is a huge population of veterans. I actually think that there's a lot of folks who really love the sense of mission, purpose, drive, working in a small team, kind of being resourceful, you know, because the military is a pretty large bureaucracy. And so there's sort of this scrappiness and just, you know, having a little bit of that autonomy. So I feel like there's a lot of elements of entrepreneurship that veterans gravitate to because it's kind of been their experience. So I definitely feel like it resonates with a lot of veterans in terms of that. And plus, starting something is just really hard. And so there's also just the ability to kind of push through it and the grit and those circumstances that the military kind of forces you into, whether, you know, you want it or not. So, yeah.
So what did you do next in your career after that?
Yeah. So I recently transitioned from that role with that organization. We were excited to merge it with a national organization. And so taking that experience that I had running Capital Post for about 7 years, and this is very true to my form, you know, opportunities present themselves and you just sort of get involved with them and they blossom. And so by day right now, I'm working at an organization called the Common Mission Project, which is a 501c3 internationally. And we have organizations in Australia and the UK. And we are really inspiring and teaching mission-driven entrepreneurs to solve big critical problems. We're kind of the nexus of government, the private sector, and academia. And Our signature program is called Hacking for Defense, where we source and curate big problems from the Department of Defense and intelligence communities and have those solved by students at universities. And we're about 44 universities now. The program originated out of Stanford University. Steve Blank, Pete Newell, and Joe Felter were the original authors of this course. And so that's very much in line with kind of my background and what I enjoy doing. And then I also co-founded the Academy Investor Network, which is an investment syndicate designed to invest in veteran-owned companies, kind of industry agnostic, as well as non-veteran, so civilian-led companies that are in the government technology and GovTech space, essentially. And so that is around bringing together the community of service academy graduates from the five publicly funded service academies to get more involved in venture capital, to understand, get educated, but also have a seat at that table. And so that's been really exciting as well. Yeah.
Do you feel like your time working with, you spent 7 years working with startups, and it sounds like you have a lot of experience. You feel like that's helpful to you in your venture capital work?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's really exciting to work not only with founders, but also this community. So trying to bring together this community of Service Academy graduates to get excited about deals, to learn about the process of investing. And ultimately, what really gets me excited about it is, funding the next generation of founders and knowing, the capital is so important to their ventures, but it's also when you're starting something, having access to a network, having access to help, you're not going to see probably, any sort of, exit activity for 5-10 years, right? And so what do you do in the meantime? You bring those resources to those companies. And I feel like, especially in the Service Academy community, there's very much a feeling of service and kind of giving back. And so it's a way to contribute to those entrepreneurs and help them grow and scale. So, yeah.
I know it's been a little while since you were at Dartner. It sounds like you tapped a lot of the resources and, yes, with your previous incubator and relationships that you had. Do you feel like you still pull on the educational experience that you have, the experiences that you had there in the program?
I do. Absolutely. I mean, I think the one thing that I'm constantly, I went in very hard-nosed on the academic piece. And people told me this, but I guess I just didn't really appreciate it. And coming out, I feel like it's really the network, and I consider the network a resource as well. I mean, one other Darden alum that I will call out is Wes Blackwell, who is also an executive MBA graduate. I mean, I credit him. He and his partner Brad Harrison were sort of the original visionaries behind the Academy Investor Network. And that was a Darden connection as well as a Service Academy connection. But that was something that I have heavily leaned on as well as Wes's guidance and expertise and support too. So, yeah.
Yeah, relationships do matter a lot. Darden is a relationship place. And one of the things that's been cool, I mean, as I mentioned, we've had this growing interest in entrepreneurship. We have a lot of really interesting electives. We have tremendous resources through the Batten Institute, just the faculty. That teach. But also we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the alums who are plugged into this world and all the relationships. MJ Toms, if she was here with us, who is, with the Batten Institute, and she would remind us of that. That is also about relationships and just being able to pick up the phone and call somebody and pick their brain about something.
Well, and I'll also do a plug too for spouses of alums. I mean, that's one thing that I think we often talk about, just the graduates, but I have had really great friendships and relationships from spouses of my classmates and friends of my classmates. So I think you also have to realize it's not just the immediate alumni. It's all the folks that they put you in touch with that can really be these life-changing relationships. And I can point back and kind of thread that all the way back to Darden. So, yeah.
All right. So a prospective student calls you and says, Emily, I hear you went to Darden.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the program. I mean, what's your pitch? What do you encourage them to think about?
Yeah. I mean, I think what I would encourage them to think about, well, just in terms of getting an MBA, I would say, like, what is this going to do for you? And really having that perspective. I would say one of the things that I went in anticipating at Darden was I was expecting more of like the accounting and the finance and the M&A and sort of just really focusing on that. And I think what I would pitch to the student is you're actually going to be getting a much broader perspective, dare I say enterprise perspective, which was the big word that we were, you know, week one inundated with. But really you're going to get a much broader perspective with respect. And so almost like hold on to your hat, because you will, you know, just make sure that you're putting attention on all the aspects of the education. And one thing I would plug, so having gone to West Point and coming up through the military, I had exposure to a lot of leadership and management classes. And so admittedly, I was sort of like, okay, I've got that, right? I can do that. But that piece was just fantastic and something that was such an eye-opener for me. So I would say really kind of go in knowing what you really need, but just be open to all the other courses and possibilities, because you will kind of, there's a lot of gems. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, you make a great point. We still talk about the enterprise perspective. In fact, the first week of the program, LR1, typically titled Leading with an Enterprise Perspective.
Exactly. Because it is exactly. I didn't know if that was still, right? The enterprise perspective. I remember writing my paper about, you know, how am I going to lead with an enterprise perspective? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that is kind of the secret sauce of a lot of what happens at Darden. The fact that, you know, you might be sitting in an accounting class, but the focus is sort of pulling back and thinking about it from that C-suite perspective.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think the other piece too, is just, I really needed some frameworks and some ways to think about things. And so that's another thing I would tell a prospective student is, I think so much of the value of education is just learning like how to think critically and how to try on different frameworks and just ways to approach those different, you know, whatever it is you're doing. And that's something you're definitely going to do, especially with, you know, the case method and whatnot. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, you've mentioned it in a few different ways, but I think it's so true for all of our students. So much of this experience is about exploration, right? It's, you know what you know the experiences that you've had, but coming to the program, being surrounded by a different group of people than you would encounter in your everyday life, in your work life, being exposed to problems and industries and all these things that you haven't had direct experience with, you're just exploring, really.
And I'd also say, I think as I've gotten older and more maybe settled, I think I also appreciate that those types of opportunities to be in an experience like that are kind of few and far between. Like, you really have to seek those out more. I think as you're growing up, and, you know, one analogy I often think about is like when you're a kid, or now that my own kids are at this age, you know, you go to camps and you're spending, say, 10 hours a day in a sports camp, just practicing and trying different techniques, and you're doing great and everything's wonderful. And in the evening, you're having fun and connecting with your campmates. I mean, this is a kind of a different analogy, but then the big challenge is, how do you apply that back when you go back to your sport, your high school sports team or your college sports, you know, whatever that is. That's the piece that I feel like is so valuable with an executive MBA, because you can do that almost in real time. There doesn't have to be that separation. Like, you can go to your desk on Monday morning at 8 o'clock and take the same things, or at least try. And that's kind of fun. Like, you don't have to wait to do that. Like, it's pretty much synonymous. And I have to say, it's also a struggle, because in this amazing, wonderful environment, and then it's almost like you make contact again with your real life. And it's like, okay, this is much harder sometimes to do outside the classroom, right? Like, I need to go back, or I need to get that perspective. And I think that's the thing, like the LRs are really great, the residencies, because you sort of get incubated and you sort of get surrounded by all this great content and experience and guest lecturers. But then, you know, one of the things I used to kind of it's funny, you know, I don't know if they still do this, but we used to have to write a paper, like, how am I going to apply this to my job or my experience? And that's like the most important piece of the course. Like, how am I actually going to apply this? That's the hardest piece, right? Like, how do I do that in real time? How do I take all this great knowledge? So, yeah.
One of the things you said made me think about this moment that invariably comes for all of our classes. Yeah. I say this, you're recording this in February. we'll have another class, the class of 2021, graduate in May.
Yeah.
And invariably, when they get to LR2, which is these days the last academic activity,
there
is like a real bittersweet quality to it that people are like genuinely, they're excited, you know, they'll be graduating, they've accomplished something really difficult, but they're also like a little bit sad that...
Right.
They won't be in the same place with the same group of people in exactly the same way. Was that your experience?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's like the band breaks up sort of a thing. I mean, I still keep in touch. I have a great group of friends. I'll call out Megan Welsh, who's at Capital One, Lynette Crowder. I mean, we have a text string going right now, like even as I, you know, on the podcast. I think that's the piece that is, it's like, how do you kind of insert back into your real life? I do feel like, and I don't know if this is still the case, but our final LR was very focused on your life, which I was not expecting at all. Again, I was really coming in like hard charging quant, thinking I'm going to be, you know, just all focused in spreadsheets. And the last learning residency was really focused on like, how will you measure your life? Like, what impact will you make, your balance? And I was just like floored at some of the content in that. And I've actually really gravitated towards some of those subject matters too, as well, because it was such a, again, you don't often get an experience to be able to get exposed to that sort of stuff unless, you know, you're in a course like that where you're just like, and it's all done for you, right? You just sit there and listen and absorb it, right? I mean, nowadays it's tough sometimes to find that stuff and access it. So, yeah.
It's a thing that we remind our prospective students about all the time. And the fact that you're around these days, 135, 40 or so classmates, all in that same place of kind of exploring and learning. And I came from a law school background to Darden. So as you might imagine, with a lawyer coming to an MBA program, I thought everything was going to be super technical too.
Yes.
And so to encounter students who are like doing all this self-discovery and like finally have space to think about their leadership style and talking about how self-aware they've become in the program or through the program, I'm like, wow, okay, this is surprising. But I think it's what Darden's all about. I mean, that's really...
Yeah.
I was the focus of it all.
I was not expecting that as well. But I think it was such a nice, again, it's just a great, I think these reflection points in your life are so necessary. And I question, like, if you don't have it, then when will you have it? You know, what incident or event will sort of force you to have that? So take advantage of it while, you know, you're in that moment to explore some of those things and have those conversations with people. So absolutely.
Well, Emily, it's such a pleasure having you on the podcast, and
thank
you for the recommendations. we will be reaching out to some of your classmates
absolutely.
For sure. That's one of so many people to invite on the podcast. So little time. That is one of our biggest challenges.
I've got a good Rolodex of future people. So hopefully, I look forward to hearing their journeys and their podcasts in the future. So
And that was my interview with Emily McMahon, member of our Executive MBA Class of 2010. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's EXEC, MBA at darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.